This is The Book Group on RNIB Connect Radio. RNIB Talk and Support run telephone social groups for adults with sight loss. There are telebefriending groups which help you socialise by phone for friendship and support, or you can share your passion for books and reading by taking part in a telephone book club. We'll tell you how you can take part in your own telephone social group later on in the show. But for now, let's listen in to our telephone book group on RNIB Connect Radio.
Hello, I'm Peggy. I'm 80. I'm from Scotland, but now I live in West Wales. I have macular degeneration. I've always loved reading. I love anything and everything. I read all sorts of books and always have.
Hello, I'm David. I'm from Chester and I'm 57 years old. I went blind when I was 6 months old, and I have very badly scarred retinas. As far as reading goes, I do like a lot of horror fiction. I like some crime fiction, and I like a lot of classics.
I'm Lillian, and I'm from Wigan. I like reading a variety of things, particularly like crime.
Hi, I'm called Peter, and I live in Grays, Essex. I'm 91. If you pardon my stammer, by the way, I have a wide taste in books, adventure stories. I've been reading Terry Pratchett recently.
Hello there. My name is Alan. I'm 65 and I live in Epping Forest. I've been blind since birth, and I have macular dystrophy of the Stargardt type. I love books, I love reading, I love audiobooks. Crime and travel are my favourite genre.
Hello, I'm Supriya. I come from Aldershot, and I'm 42. And I have been blind since I was about 2 years old, and I had a condition called retinoblastoma, which is a tumour in the eyes. I like reading classics, and any other books, mainly historical fiction, romantic fiction, and I'll try anything once.
I'm Robert Kirkwood. I'll be facilitating the conversation today as the group discusses a previous winner of the Booker Prize from 2011, The Sense of an Ending by Julian Barnes.
I remember, in no particular order, a shiny inner wrist, steam rising from a wet sink as a hot frying pan is laughingly tossed into it, a river rushing nonsensically upstream, its wave and wash lit by half a dozen chasing torch beams. Another river, broad and grey, the direction of its flow disguised by a stiff wind exciting the surface. Bathwater, long gone cold, behind a locked door. This last isn't something I actually saw, but what you end up remembering isn't always the same as what you have witnessed.
Richard Morant reading the talking book version of The Sense of an Ending by Julian Barnes. Now let's hear the book group's initial impressions. Peter, what were your thoughts on the book?
I don't know, really. It's a bit vague in my mind, even though I've only just finished it. It's gone into the mist.
Supriya, are you the same?
I read the book, yes. Although it was a long time ago now, I have read about 20 books since then, so my memory isn't as fresh. But I did, I wouldn't say enjoy, that's not the word. And it was an okay book. I hadn't read Julian Barnes before, so that I was quite curious to see how he writes, and I was interested. I was glad the length of the book was just right, I thought, for the story. I started to like the characters, but then I was a bit disappointed with them. I did like the main character, Tony, I think his name is.
That's right, Tony, yeah.
I thought there was a lot of passages devoted to what he thought or what his feelings were. But other than that, it was a fairly good book, I would say.
And Peggy, what about yourself?
I wasn't really particularly keen on it. It took a while to get into it. It's a while since I read it too. I had to go back today and look at my notes that I put in the computer about different books to remind me about it. Didn't really get terribly engrossed with any of the characters, not even the main one. And I thought it was a bit disjointed, I think. It jumped backwards and forwards. Maybe it was just my lack of concentration, but I don't think I could honestly say it ever really gripped me. I didn't not like it, but I wouldn't rave about it. It was interesting. A lot of what was in it was interesting, but as I say, I felt it was a bit jumped backwards and forwards between the characters.
And David, what about yourself?
Well, I have to say that I enjoyed the book very much. I wasn't expecting to. After the first sort of 5-10 minutes, I thought, oh no, it's going to be one of these odd sort of psychological, arcane books that is going to be very difficult to get to grips with. But actually, it turned out that to be the case in a sense, but I was absolutely gripped, and I loved all of the characters, really. And it's just one of those books that I couldn't not read once I'd started. I think to say that I enjoyed it was possibly misstating it a bit. It was compelling rather than really enjoyable, I think.
Alan, what about yourself?
I think, once again, I wouldn't use the word enjoy. A couple of people have said. I found it intriguing. I could relate to it, although I didn't go to a day school. I went to a boarding school. We left school and two or three of us said, we'll keep in touch. And that was very similar to the friendships that the four of them formed. And I found that dynamic quite interesting. Yeah, I was going to say entertaining, but I'll say interesting. And one was clearly more academic than the other three, and the one who went obviously direct to Cambridge. And I also enjoyed the repartee between the boys and the teacher. I found that quite amusing in many ways. You know, getting one up on the teacher, talking on quite an intellectual level for teenage boys, especially Adrian, the boy who went to Cambridge, the clever one. I found that quite good. In fact, at one point the teacher says, one day you'll take this class, you know, so he could see potential in Adrian. I thought it was going to be a bit wordy, lots of words to get across, his point, the author, and a lot of his own philosophy in between, you know, what was the beginnings of a base of a plot or a storyline. But I did want to know. I wanted to know what happened all the time. So that brought me back to focusing and listening. And I won't say any more because obviously the book is also in part one and part two. So it follows their lives. You know, it obviously goes into part two and it follows their own individual experiences of life, good and bad. Also, the boy in the school who took his own life, once again, you know, when you're reading a book, I could relate that to an experience we had at boarding school where not a pupil took his life, but one of the teachers took his life, and how that was conveyed to us as pupils. So I could, you know, I found things to hang my hat on in this book. Yes, from thinking I wouldn't, this book wouldn't grip me because I've never read Julian Barnes before. My wife, who reads even more than me, has never got through a Julian Barnes book, so that wasn't a particularly good start for me. But I ended up encouraging her to read this book. And I shall certainly read another Julian Barnes based on this book. But I think I'll rest my case there for now.
Yeah, we'll get to the second part in a moment. But finally, Lillian, what were your initial thoughts on the book?
I thought it was very perceptive and I enjoyed the dry humour. For me, it asked questions about, and it was philosophical, but it was asking questions about how we construct our own history, our version of our lives. And I think we edit things and we bend the truth and we only choose to remember the best best of ourselves. I think that comes across very strongly.
Yeah.
And the boys, I enjoyed the boys at school. I was a teacher of teenage boys, and I think it was a good, it was very good the way that they are immature in some ways, but yet you can have quite intellectual discussions on some topics because of the learning. And I did enjoy how the teachers, as you say, the repartee with the teachers, I could identify with that. And I think it's very obvious when they're at school that Adrian Finn is going to be really pivotal to the story. I think that's a clear marker. So I'll stop there, because then I'll be going into the second part.
The talking book version of The Sense of an Ending is read by Richard Morant.
Later on in life, you expect a bit of rest, don't you? You think you deserve it. I did, anyway. But then you begin to understand that the reward of merit is not life's business. Also, when you're young, you think you can predict the likely pains and bleaknesses that age might bring. You imagine yourself being lonely, divorced, widowed, children growing away from you, friends dying. You imagine the loss of status, the loss of desire and desirability. You may go further and consider your own approaching death, which, despite what company you may muster, can only be faced alone. But all this is looking ahead. What you fail to do is look ahead and then imagine yourself looking back from that future point. Learning the new emotions that time brings, discovering, for example, that as the witnesses to your life diminish, there is less corroboration and therefore less certainty as to what you are or have been. Even if you have assiduously kept records in words, sound, pictures, you may find you have attended to the wrong kind of record-keeping. What was the line Adrian used to quote? History is that certainty produced at the point where the imperfections of memory meet the inadequacies of documentation.
Now a return to the book group. Due to the way the show is recorded, there may be some noises off, and from this point on the show contains spoilers for the book. How did you take the change from being a book about school to a book about a middle-aged man?
Okay. Well, I quite enjoyed the way he looked back. I think all the description of the dating in the 60s, again, I thought it was very funny, you know, comparing your friend's experiences with your experiences, and the way he compares how young people get together nowadays to the way you had to go about it in the 60s, you know, all the rigmarole, the formality of it, really, in the 60s, just because he's looking back just before the kind of swinging 60s, isn't he? And when he goes to Veronica's parents, I think it's quite funny in a cringy kind of way, you know, that some of the things that her dad particularly says to him, you know, I can just visualise that, you know, his discomfort. And also when he breaks up with Veronica, I thought that was quite funny. The tit for tat where they're taking each other's gifts to the Oxfam shop. I thought, you know, there's lots of humour in it. But then, of course, it does become quite serious. And as I said, in the beginning, he's, you know, he's coming across as a really nice guy, and he sees himself as a nice person. But when the awful vindictive letter is revealed, you know, the way he writes to Adrian and Veronica, and he's kind of wiped that from his memory, hasn't he? Because at first he tells the reader that he sends a postcard, kind of giving them his blessing and saying there's no hard feelings, and then it emerges that he's written this awful letter. And I quite liked, there was a really good analogy of, he said about the black box, you know, the flight recorder, that if nothing terrible happens, it's wiped clean, you know. And I thought that was really good, you know, that this idea of wiping his memory clean. And then going on, I think it's quite mysterious the way she takes him to see the adults with learning difficulties. But straight away, I suspected, I thought, well, I think one of these is going to be the son. I thought of either Adrian or Tony himself, because she splits up with Tony and starts going out with Adrian quite quickly, really, doesn't she? So I thought perhaps one of these is their son. But then there's the echoes of the boy who hung himself because his girlfriend was pregnant. That kind of comes back to your mind. And then this big reveal, during the reveal, another funny part is, you know, he's kind of focusing on his hand-cut chips and there not being enough salt on his hand-cut chips. You know, and it seems a very strange thing, you know, when this serious matter is being revealed.
So, Alan, how was the second part for you?
It went from sort of being quite sort of intellectual to, as you say, chips and things, you know, descriptions of mundane things interwoven with something quite serious that was going on between the characters, the book, his mind. You know, it was a real mix of things. And I thought the writer was very clever, actually. I thought the writing was very good. And just for listeners' benefit, the reader of this book on Talking Book, I heard it on Talking Book audio CD, I thought he did the book justice as well. Mm. You know, I thought it was a good choice of reader for this book.
Yes.
Yeah, it was read by Richard Moran. Any comments on his narration?
I thought it was. I did think it was well read. The book didn't do anything for me,
yes,
but I did think
well.
It was well read.
It was very good. Yeah.
But the second part, I mean, it's dealing with a large slice of life. I'd like to have known a little bit more about Tony's wife. You know, they had a bit of dialogue between them, and I felt we're getting to know him and how she viewed him, you know, prior to the divorce. So. And they had a daughter as well, didn't they? Didn't they, Lillian? Remind
yes,
me?
They do. Yes.
Yeah. Oh, good. The memory hasn't totally gone. And you know, his assessment of his daughter's life and things. I thought that I liked a little bit more of that. But yeah, the more I got into this book, the more I wanted to get back to it, and I wanted to know more. I wanted to know a little bit more, like a jigsaw, you know. And the letter, that letter that he sent that Lillian's mentioned, what a letter that was.
Mm.
You know, I mean, I don't know if there's a letter like that in all of us.
Mm.
but wow, you know. And I don't think I'm giving too much away if I say that he was so remorseful at a later stage. But the actual words of that letter were so full of so much of his feeling, his emotion, his venom, you know. I thought that was really, really left me with, you know, thinking, wow, you know, the strength of the feeling he had for someone that, for two people, you know, that he admired. And then, of course, that I'm jumping back a little bit, the mystery of being left £500, you know, and the unravelling of that. And how that came about. I thought that was very clever, you know, very clever within a plot. I thought that was almost genius.
Now, you mentioned the memory going. Do you think it's just a book about the imperfections of memory?
That was certainly one of the themes that came across to me in it, that, you know, and like I said, it was sort of disjointed because bits of memory didn't seem to fall in any sequence. And that's possibly because of an imperfect memory.
It's also to do with misjudgment as well, because there were things in Veronica's life and that situation that he could not possibly have known, you know, which was one of the reasons why he wrote that awful letter. I must admit, I'm glad not to have ever received a letter of that type.
I don't think he actually forgot necessarily. There's no suggestion to say he has actually forgotten. Just because it's not mentioned doesn't mean to say that he doesn't remember writing the letter. It might be a bit vague after 40 odd years, but maybe he hasn't forgotten. He just doesn't want to mention it. It's suppressed.
Yeah. Yes.
He
buried it.
Selective memory.
It is. He chooses not to remember the how nasty he was. He wants to portray himself as this very affable guy, doesn't he?
That's where I think the narrator, Richard Morant, really scores well, because he does come across as this kind of guy that is sort of affable and suddenly realises that he's not as affable as he thought he was.
I felt I sort of knew him. You know, I felt like I could share a pint with him.
Yes, I that after reading the book about halfway through. I just think he's just an average guy, and I quite liked him. He seems to have led the most average life of all the characters in the book. And going back to the letter, for somebody in his situation, I don't think it is very unusual to write a nasty letter like that. I wasn't overly surprised by it either.
No, I don't think it's altogether surprising. But I think it did... The thing that came across when he actually realised many years later that he had written that letter, I think it did take him by surprise at that stage.
Maybe he'd mellowed a little bit by then.
Yeah.
Peter, what do you think about that?
Yes, I think he certainly dealt with the tensions and the anxieties of learning how to deal with the sexual urges as they impinge on the kind of life of a teenager. That's about it.
RNIB. Supporting people with sight loss.
Would you like to chat over the telephone with a group of like-minded people? RNIB's award-winning telephone social groups are small, friendly and lots of fun. A great way of making new friends and a chance to socialise without leaving the comfort of your home. Telephone RNIB Talk and Support on 0845 330 3723 or email talkandsupport@rnib.org.uk.
With many spoilers for the book, let's return to the book group, who are discussing The Sense of an Ending by Julian Barnes. Now, I've read a quote. It's probably not fair, but it says, "The ending of The Sense of an Ending makes no sense."
I didn't think the ending was very satisfactory either, to be fair. I felt the main character, to me, he came across quite a lot of the time as a bit weak.
But let's get to it, and let's get really into spoiler territory then. So what are people's ideas as to what happened at the end?
I couldn't make my mind up about it.
Well, I thought it was believable, you know. There was some hint, well, I felt there was some hint about Veronica's mother, you know, that she might get involved with something like this. I even thought she might get involved with Tony.
There
was some hint, but I remember when I read it, or it was being read to me, I thought, oh, there could be something here. You know, it was just one line he threw in.
Yes. Yeah. When he was visiting her parents, Veronica, is it? Yeah, Veronica and a brother and the dad, they all go out for a walk, and leave him on his own with the mother. And, you know, she's cooking some breakfast for him. But she's kind of very wistful, isn't she? And to me, she seemed, even at that point, that she wasn't very happy with her life and she was looking for something else. And I thought, I think she's eyeing him up, you know. So when it was revealed that it was her that had had the baby with Adrian, I wasn't shocked. I did accept it because I could imagine her making a play for Adrian, as I think she would have done for Tony if he'd have kept on with that relationship. But also what I did think was, whether it was Tony's letter that drove Adrian to, was it Sarah, Veronica's mum, drove him to her, because, you know, he didn't want Adrian and Veronica to have a relationship. And I think, you know, I know it doesn't, I'm reading between the lines, but I almost imagine that, you know, she would kind of offer him some comfort, you know, because he was upset by that letter.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think it was quite a clever twist at the end. It
yeah.
was, for me, I could imagine that kind of thing happening, yeah.
It'd be interesting to read the rest of the diary, wouldn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, we never actually got to look at that.
No, I found that very frustrating.
Yeah, that was the only bit I switched. My mind switches off anything mathematical. When you started reading those algebraic formulas,
you and me both.
Yeah.
Because even when he explained at the end, he said, oh, I understand the formula. And he went through it again and thought, well, I don't understand that still.
No. You and me both. You weren't alone.
Me neither.
I don't think it was necessary, fortunately, to understand all that.
No, it was a clever work, wasn't it?
Yeah, a bit too clever, yeah.
But to me, there seemed a lot of sort of underlying unhappiness. None of them seemed really happy with their lives, not Veronica or our parents. There was a sort of, there was something about all of them that they didn't seem completely happy with their life or their relationships.
No.
They seemed to be just sort of dodging along.
Well, perhaps that's the truth of it with a lot of people, because reveal that her father was actually an alcoholic, because he dies quite young, doesn't he, because of his alcoholism, yeah?
Because quite a lot of it was set, you know, in London. I don't know where he found the bench, by the way, to sit with Veronica on the bridge.
I don't know there were any benches.
I've never found a bench.
There's lots of benches, isn't there?
Yeah, I thought that too, yeah.
Alan, you were mentioning earlier the line, you just don't get it.
But it was just, it was more than just, you just don't get it, you know. It was, to read it, did that justice. But it stayed with me, that, you know. And she was saying not only about that, she was talking about, in a way, I think she was talking about their whole relationship.
Yes,
it was very brief.
Teenagers saying that to their parents.
I
never really liked Veronica. I don't know what other people feel, but I just thought she was quite mean from the start. And she had a reason why she didn't like Tony after that nasty letter. But she wasn't entirely innocent either.
I
didn't understand why she behaved the way she did. Lots of questions were unanswered in that book, I thought.
Yeah.
And why she had to go and show him the brother, rather than just explain everything, and she would take him in the car and just abruptly just chuck him somewhere and go off. And he kept with it. And, you know, to me, I would have just made her sit down and talk to me, whether she wanted to or not.
That was one of the reasons I felt it was a bit weak in
some
way.
Yeah, I agree, Peggy. Yeah, I think there I would absolutely agree with you. Yeah. I mean, most of the time he was in the second part, in his adult life, he was quite ordinary, but he also had moments of weakness, didn't he?
Yeah.
Well, that whole business where he kept prodding at the saw, you know, Veronica, he kept getting in touch with her by email and stuff. And, you know, he didn't have the courage to understand that things were over and he shouldn't keep pursuing it.
I'm glad I read it, or glad I heard it.
It was interesting, and it was certainly different.
It was a different sort of book, yeah.
Yeah.
It was very different, yeah.
It's
interesting to read different kinds of books, things like that take you out of your comfort zone.
Yeah. I'm not sure if I would have enjoyed it as much if it had been too long. I think someone else said it was just the right length.
Yeah, it was. Exactly.
Any longer, I think it would have been a bit too much.
Yeah.
That was actually a very skillful device by the author to make sure that you didn't lose interest in it, or, you know, it didn't weigh too heavily on you.
Yeah. I read it in three sessions over Saturday and Sunday. So, But I mean, say, you know, the word enjoy, but I did enjoy the humour in it. I think it was kind of, you know, my sense of humour, some of the things that he was just throwing in there. And then, again, I think perhaps you have to be, I'm in my 60s, so perhaps you can identify with some of the situations, you know, and you remember something that he mentions and you have a little chuckle about it, you know.
Let's
have another listen to the talking book of The Sense of an Ending by Julian Barnes. It's read by Richard Morant.
I don't wish to pry, Mr. Webster, but could there be something in the past, perhaps, between you and Miss Ford which might become relevant were it eventually to come to civil or indeed criminal proceedings? Something between me and Miss Ford? A particular image suddenly came into my mind as I gazed at the backs of what I assumed to be family photographs. You've made things much clearer, Mr. Gunnell. I'll put a first-class stamp on when I pay your bill. He smiled. Actually, it's a thing we do notice in certain cases.
That's almost it for this month's meeting of the book group. The Sense of an Ending by Julian Barnes is available from the RNIB Library in giant print, in Braille, and as talking book number 19027. Thanks, everyone.
Yeah. Hopefully speak to you next month.
Okay, thank you, everyone.
Bye.
Bye.
Someone has left the conference. Someone has left the conference.
To join a group, either telebefriending or a telephone book club, please email talkandsupport@rnib.org.uk or call one of the two following numbers: 0845 330 3723 or 0207 391 2218. Thanks to RNIB Talk and Support, you've been listening to The Book Group on RNIB Connect Radio.